The 33 sermons on Nibbana were delivered by the Venerable Bhikkhu Katukurunde Nyanananda in Sinhala at Mitrigala Nisaranavanaya Forest Hermitage. They were translated into English by the same Venerable Monk, presently residing at Potkulkala Forest Hermitage in Kandagedra Devalagam.
තස්ස භගවතු අරහතු සම්මා සම්බුද්ධස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතු සම්මා සම්බුද්ධස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතු සම්මා සම්බුද්ධස්ස ඒකං සන්තං ඒකං පනිතං යදිදං සබ්බ සංඛාර සමතෝ සබ්බෝපදීපටි නිසග්ගෝ තණ්හක්ඛයෝ විරාගෝ නිරෝධෝ නිබ්බාන. This is peaceful, this is excellent, namely the stilling of all preparations, the relinquishment of all assets, the destruction of craving, detachment, cessation, extinction. With the permission of the most venerable great preceptor and the assembly of the venerable meditative monks, this is the 26th sermon in the series of sermons on Nibbana. Even from what we have so far explained, it should be clear that the Kalakarana Sutta enshrines an extremely deep analysis of the concepts of truth and falsehood generally accepted by the world. We had to clear up a lot of jungle to approach this discourse, which has suffered from neglect to such an extent that it has become difficult to determine the correct one out of a maze of variant readings. But now we have exposed the basic ideas underlying this discourse through semantic and etymological explanations, which may even appear rather academic. The task before us now is to assimilate the deep philosophy the Buddha presents to the world by this discourse in a way that it becomes a vision. The Tathagata, who had an insight into the interior mechanism of the sixfold sense base, which is the factory for producing dogmatic beliefs that are beaten up on the anvil of logic, Takka Pariyahata, was confronted with the problem of mediation with the worldlings who see only the exterior of the sixfold sense base. In order to facilitate the understanding of the gravity of this problem, we quoted the other day an extract from the Pena Pindupama Sutta of the Kanda Samyutta, where consciousness is compared to a magical illusion. So, yathāpi bhikkave māyākāro vā māyākāra vanteva sīvā chātum mahāpathe māyāṁ vidhaṁsīya tamenaṁ cakkhumā puriso passīya nidhāyaya yonisopa parikheya tasataṁ pasato nidhāyato yonisopa parikhato rittakanyeva khāyaya tuchakanyeva khāyaya අසාරකන්නේව කායය කින්හිසියා භික්කවේ මායාය සාරු ඒව මේම කෝ භික්කවේ යංකින්ච විඤ්ඥානන් අතීතානාගත පච්චුප්පන්නන් අජ්ජත්තංවා බහිද්ධවා ඕලාරිකංවා සුකුමංවා හීනංවා පනීතංවා යං දූරයේ සන්තිකේවා තං භික්කු පස්සති නිද්ධාති යෝනිසෝ පරික්කති තසතං පසතෝ නිද්ධායතෝ යෝනිසෝ පරික්කතෝ රිත්තකන්නේව කායති තුච්චකන්නේව කායති අසාරකන්නේව කායති කින්හි සියාභික්කවේ විඥානේ සාරෝ. Suppose monks, a magician or a magician's apprentice should hold a magic show at the four crossroads, and a keen-sighted man should see it, ponder over it, and reflect on it radically. Even as he sees it, ponders over it, and reflects on it radically, he would find it empty, he would find it hollow, he would find it void of essence. What essence, monks, could there be in a magic show? Even so, monks, whatever consciousness, be it past, future or present, in oneself or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, the monk sees it, ponders over it, reflects on it radically. Even as he sees it, ponders over it, reflects on it radically, he would find it empty, he would find it hollow, you would find it void of essence. What essence, monks, could there be in consciousness? So, for the Buddha, consciousness is comparable to a magic show. This is the most extraordinary exposition not to be found in any other philosophical system, because the soul theory tries to sit pretty on consciousness when all other foundations are shattered. But then, even this citadel itself the Buddha has described in this discourse as essenceless and hollow, as a magical illusion. Let us now try to clarify for ourselves the full import of this simile of the magic show. A certain magician is going to hold a magic show in some hall or theater. Among those who have come to see the magic show, there is a wealthy person with the wisdom eye who tells himself, "Today I must see the magic show inside out." With this determination, he hides himself in a corner of the stage, unseen by others. When the magic show starts, this person begins to discover, before long, the secrets of the magician, his deceitful stock in trade counterfeits, hidden strings and buttons, secret pockets and false bottoms in his magic boxes. He observes clearly all the secret gadgets that the audience is unaware of. With this vision, he comes to the conclusion that there is no magic in any of those gadgets. Some sort of disenchantment sets in. Now he has no curiosity, amazement, fright or amusement that he used to get whenever he watched those magic shows. Instead, he now settles into a mood of equanimity. Since there is nothing more for him to see in the magic show, he mildly turns his attention towards the audience. Then he sees the contrast. The entire hall is a sea of craned necks, gaping mouths and goggle eyes with ahs and ahs and whistles of speechless amazement. At this sorry sight, he even feels remorseful that he himself was in this same plight before. So in this way, he sees through the magic show an insight instead of a sight. When the show ends, he steps out of the hall and tries to slink away unseen. But he runs into a friend of his who also was one of the spectators. Now he has to listen to a vivid commentary on the magic show. His friend wants him to join in his appreciation, but he listens through with equanimity. Puzzled by this strange reserved attitude, the friend asks, "Why, you were in the same hall all this time, weren't you?" "Yes, I was." "Then were you sleeping?" "Oh, no." "You weren't watching closely, I suppose." "No, no, I was watching it all right. Maybe I was watching too closely." "You say you were watching, but you don't seem to have seen the show." "No, I saw it. In fact, I saw it so well that I missed the show." The above dialogue between the man who watched the show with discernment and the one who watched with naive credulity should give a clue to the riddle-like proclamations of the Buddha in the Kalakarama Sutta. The Buddha also was confronted with the same problematic situation after his enlightenment. It was an insight into the magic show of consciousness. That man with discernment hid himself in a corner of the stage to get that insight. The Buddha also had to hide in some corner of the world stage for his enlightenment. The term patisallana, solitude, has a nuance suggestive of hideaway. It is in such a hideaway that the Buddha witnessed the interior of the sixfold sense base. The reason for his equanimity towards conflicting views about truth and falsehood in the world, as evidenced by this discourse, is the very insight into the sixth sense basis. First of all, let us try to compare our parable with the discourse proper. Now the Buddha declared, "Yang bhikkave sadeva kasa lokasa samarakasa sabrahmakasa sasamana brahmaniya pajaya sadeva manusaya dittang sutang mutang vinyatang pattang pariyesitang anuvicharitang manasa tamahang janami." Yang bhikkave sadeva kasa lokasa samarakasa sabrahmakasa sasamana brahmaniya pajaya sadeva manusaya dittang sutang mutang vinyatang pattang pariyesitang anuvicharitang manasa tamahang abhanyasin tang tathagatasya viditam tang tathagato na upatthas. Monks, whatsoever in the world with its gods, maras and brahmas, among the progeny consisting of recluses and brahmins, gods and men, whatever is seen, heard, sensed, cognized, sought after and pondered over by the mind, all that do I know. Monks, whatsoever in the world with its gods, maras and brahmas, Among the progeny consisting of recluses and Brahmins, gods and men, whatsoever is seen, heard, sensed, cognized, sought after and pondered over by the mind, that have I fully understood. All that is known to the Tathagata. But the Tathagata has not taken his stand upon it. Here the Buddha does not stop after saying that he knows all that, but goes on to declare that he has fully understood all that and that it is known to the Tathagata. The implication is that he has seen through all that and discovered their vanity, hollowness and essencelessness. That is to say, he not only knows, but he has grown wiser. In short, he has seen the magic show so well as to miss the show. Unlike in the case of those worldly spectators, the released mind of the Tathagata did not find anything substantial in the magic show of consciousness. That is why he refused to take his stand upon the sense data. Tang Tathagato na upatta. The Tathagata has not taken his stand upon it. In contrast to the worldly philosophers, the Tathagatas have no entanglement with all that. Ajyositang nathi Tathagatana. The dialogue we have given might highlight these distinctions regarding levels of knowledge. It may also throw more light on the concluding statement that forms the gist of the discourse. Iti ko bhikkave Tathagato ditta dattabbang dittang namanyati adittang namanyati dattabbang namanyati dattarang namanyati suta sotabbang sutang namanyati asutang namanyati sotabbang namanyati sotarang namanyati mutamotabbang mutang namanyati amutang namanyati motabbang namanyati motarang namanyati vinyata vinyatabbang vinyatang namanyati avinyatang namanyati vinyatabbang namanyati vinyatarang namanyati. Thus, monks, the Tathagata does not imagine a visible thing as apart from seeing. He does not imagine an unseen. He does not imagine a thing worth seeing. He does not imagine a seer. He does not imagine an audible thing as apart from hearing. He does not imagine an unheard. He does not imagine a thing worth hearing. He does not imagine a hearer. He does not imagine a thing to be sensed as apart from sensation. He does not imagine an unsensed. He does not imagine a thing worth seeing. He does not imagine one who senses. He does not imagine a cognizable thing as apart from cognition. He does not imagine an uncognized. He does not imagine a thing worth cognizing. He does not imagine one who cognizes. It is like the hesitation of that man with discernment who, on coming out of the hall, found it difficult to admit categorically that he had seen the magic show. Since the Tathagata had an insight into the mechanism of the sixfold sense base, that is to say, its conditioned nature, he understood that there is no one to see and nothing to see, only a seeing is there. The dictum of the Bahya Sutta in the seeing just the seeing, Ditthe Dittamattam, which we cited the other day, becomes more meaningful now. Only a seeing is there. Apart from the fact of having seen, there is nothing substantial to see. There is no magic to see. Ditta Dattabvam Dittam Namanyati. He does not imagine a sight worthwhile apart from the seeing. There is no room for a conceit of having seen a magic show. On the other hand, it is not possible to deny the fact of seeing, adittham namanyati. He does not imagine an unseen. Now that friend was curious whether this one was asleep during the magic show, but that was not the case either. Dattabham namanyati. The Tathagata does not imagine a thing worthwhile seeing. The equanimity of that witty man who was so much that he turned away from the bogus magic show to have a look at the audience below. This way, we can understand how the Tathagata discovered that there is only a seeing but nothing worthwhile seeing. Likewise, the phrase Dattarang Namanyati, he does not imagine a seer, could also be understood in the light of this parable. All those who came out of that hall, except this discerning one, were spectators. He was not one of the audience. because he had any sight into the magic show from his hiding place on the stage. The statement, Tamaham Najanamiti Vadeyyan Tam Mama Asya Musa. If I were to say that I do not know, it would be a falsehood in me, could similarly be appreciated in the light of the dialogue after the magic show. The discerning one could not see that he was not aware of what was going on, because he was fully awake during the magic show. Nor can he say that he was aware of it in the ordinary sense. An affirmation or negation of both standpoints would be out of place. This gives us a clue to understand the two statements of the Tathagata, to the effect that he is unable to say that he both knows and does not know. Janami channa cha janami, and neither knows nor does not know. Neva janami nena janami. All this is the result of his higher understanding, indicated by the word abhanyasi. The Tathagata saw the magic show of consciousness so well as to miss the show from the point of view of the worldlings. Now we come to the conclusive declaration. Yati ko bhikkave tathagato ditta sutta mutta vinyatabbesu dhammesu tadi eva tadi tamma cha panatadimha anyo tadi uttari tharova panita tharova natyeti vadami. Thus monks, the Tathagata, being such in regard to all phenomena, seen, heard, sensed and cognized, is such. Moreover, than he who is such, there is none other higher or more excellent, I declare. The other day we discussed the implication of the term Tadi. The term is usually explained as signifying the quality of remaining unshaken before the 8 worldly vicissitudes. But in this context, it has a special significance. It implies an equanimous attitude towards dogmatic views and view holders. This attitude avoids categorical affirmation or negation regarding the question of truth and falsehood. It grants a relative reality to those viewpoints. This is the moral behind the hesitation to give clear-cut answers to that inquisitive friend in our pithy dialogues. It is not the outcome of a dilly-dally attitude. There is something really deep, the result of an insight into the magic show. The reason for this suchness is the understanding of the norm of dependent arising, known as tatatha. It is obvious from the expositions of the norm of dependent arising that there are two aspects involved, namely anuloma, direct order, and patiloma, indirect order. The direct order is to be found in the first half of the 12-linked formula, beginning with the word avijja paccaya sankhara, dependent on ignorance preparations, while the indirect order is given in the second half with the words avijjaya tveva asesa viraga nirodha, etc., with remainderless fading away and cessation of ignorance, etc. The implication is that where there is ignorance, aggregates of grasping get accumulated, which in other words is a heaping up of suffering. That is fact, but then when ignorance fades away and ceases, they do not get accumulated. Now with this magic show as an illustration, we can get down to a deep analysis of the law of dependent arising. In a number of earlier sermons, we have already made an attempt to explain a certain deep dimension of this law with the help of illustrations from the dramatic and cinematographic fields. The magic show we have brought up now is even more striking as an illustration. In the case of the cinema, the background of darkness we compare to the darkness of ignorance. Because of the surrounding darkness, those who go to the cinema take as real whatever they see on the screen and create for themselves various moods and emotions. In the case of the magic show, the very ignorance of the tricks of the magician is what accounts for the apparent reality of the magic performance. Once the shroud of ignorance is thrown off, the magic show loses its magic for the audience. The magician's secret stocking trade gave rise to the sankharas for preparations, with the help of which the audience created for themselves a magic show. To that discerning man who viewed the show from his hiding place on the stage, there were no such preparations. That is why he proverbially missed the show. The same principle holds good in the case of the magical illusion, Maya, that is consciousness. A clear instance of this is the reference in the Mahavedala Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya to Vijnana, consciousness, and Panya, wisdom, as two conjoined psychological states. They cannot be separated one from the other, Sansatta, no Visansatta, but they can be distinguished functionally. Out of them, wisdom is to be developed, while consciousness is to be comprehended. Panya bhavitabha vijnanam parinyas. The development of wisdom is for the purpose of comprehending consciousness. And comprehended consciousness proves to be empty, essenceless and hollow. It is such a transformation that took place within the person who watched the magic show with discernment. He watched it too closely, so much so that the preparations, sankhara, in the form of the secret stock in trade of the magician, became ineffective and nugatory. This makes clear the connection between ignorance, avidya, and preparations, sankhara. That is why ignorance takes precedence in the formula of dependent arising. Preparations owe their effectiveness to ignorance. They are dependent on ignorance. To understand preparations for what they are is knowledge. Simultaneous with the arising of that knowledge, preparations become mere preparations or pure preparations, Suddha Sankhara. This gives us the clue to unravel the meaning of the verse in the Adhimutta Theragatha quoted earlier. Suddhaṃ dhamma samuppādaṃ, suddhaṃ sankhāra santatiṃ, passantasya yathābhūtaṃ na bhayaṃ hoti kāmaṃ. To one who sees the arising of pure dhammas and the sequence of pure preparations as they are, there is no fear or headman. In a limited sense, we can say that graspings relating to a magic show did not get accumulated in the mind of the discerning person. While his friend was gathering them eagerly, the latter came out of the hall as if coming out of the magic world. He had been amazing graspings proper to a magic world due to his ignorance of those preparations. From this one may well infer that if at any point of time consciousness is comprehended by wisdom, preparations, sankhara, become mere preparations or pure preparations. Being influx-free, they do not go to build up a prepared sankhata. They do not precipitate an amazing of grasping, upada, to bring about an existence, bhava. This amounts to a release from existence. One seems to be in the world, but one is not of the world. That man with discernment was in the hall all that time, but it was as if he was not there. Let us now go deeper into the implication of the term tadi, such, with reference to the law of dependent arising, known as tatata, suchness. From the dialogue that followed the magic show, it is clear that there are two points of view. We have here a question of two different points of view. If we are to explain these two viewpoints with reference to the law of dependent arising, we may allude to the distinction made, for instance, in the Nidana Samyukta, between the basic principle of dependent arising and the phenomena dependent realism. We have already cited the relevant declaration. Paticca-samuppādāṃ ca vo bhikkhave yadhisāmi, paticca-samuppanne ca dhamme. Monks, I shall preach to you dependent arising and things that are dependent realism. Sometimes two significant terms are used to denote these two aspects, namely hetu and hetu samuppanna dhamma. about the Aryan disciple, be he even a stream winner, it is said that his understanding of dependent arising covers both these aspects. Hetu cha sudhitto hetu samuppanna cha dhamma. The cause as well as the things arisen from a cause are well seen or understood by him. As we pointed out in our discussion of the hilltop festival in connection with the Upatissa Kolita episode, the disenchantment with the hilltop festival served as a setting for their encounter with the Venerable Asadi. As soon as Venerable Asadi uttered the significant piti verse, Ye dhamma hetu pabha, te sang hetu tathagato ah, te sang yo nirodho, evam vadi mahasamu. Of things that proceed from a cause, they are cause that the Tathagata has told, and also their cessation, thus teaches the great ascetic. The wandering ascetic Upatissa, who was to become Venerable Sariputta later, grasped the clue to the entire samsaric riddle then and there, and discovered the secret of the magic show of consciousness even by the first two lines. That was because he excelled in wisdom. As soon as he heard the lines, of things that proceed from a cause, they are cause that the Tathagata has told, he understood the basic principle of dependent arising. Yankinchi samde dhamma, sabmantam nirodha dhamma. Whatever is of a nature to arise, all that is of a nature to cease. The wandering ascetic Kolita, however, became a stream winner only on hearing all four lines. This pithy verse has been variously interpreted, but the word hetu in this verse has to be understood as a reference to the law of dependent arising. When asked what Patisamuppada is, the usual answer is a smattering of the spell-linked formula in direct and reverse order. The most important normative prefatory declaration is ignored. It must mean sati, idam hoti. Imasa upada dan upadati. Imasmin asati idam nehoti. Imasa nirodha idam nirujjati. This being, this comes to be. With the arising of this, this arises. This not being, this does not come to be. With the cessation of this, this ceases. This statement of the basic principle of dependent arising is very often overlooked. It is this basic principle that finds expression in that pithy verse, the line, Ye dhamma hetu pabha, of things that proceed from a cause, is generally regarded as a reference to the first link, avijja. But this is not the case. All the 12 links are dependently arisen, and avijja is no exception. Even ignorance arises with the arising of influxes. Asava samudaya avijja samudaya. Here we have something extremely deep. The allusion here is to the basic principle couched in the phrases imasmin tati idam hoti, etc. In such discourses as the Bahudhatuka Sutta, the 12-linked formula is introduced with a set of these thematic phrases, which is then related to the formula proper with the conjunctive, that is to say, yadidam. This conjunctive clearly indicates that the 12-linked formula is an illustration. The 12 links are therefore things dependently arisen. Paticchasamuppanna dhamma. They are all arisen from a cause, hetu pabhava dhamma. So even ignorance is not the cause. The cause is the underlying principle itself. This being, this comes to be. With the arising of this, this arises. This not being, this does not come to be. With the cessation of this, this ceases. This is the norm, the suchness, tatta, that the Buddha discovered. That man with discernment at the magic show, looking down at the audience with commiseration, had a similar sympathetic understanding born of realization. I too have been in this same sorry plight before. Due to ignorance, a sequence of phenomena occurs, precipitating a heaping of graspings. With the cessation of ignorance, all that comes to cease. It is by seeing this cessation that the momentous inner transformation took place. The insight into this cessation brings about the realization that all what the worldlings take as absolutely true, permanent or eternal are mere phenomena arisen from the mind. Mano pubbangama dhamma. Mind is the forerunner of all mind objects. One comes to understand that all what is arisen is bound to cease, and that the cessation can occur here and now. In discussing the formula of Patisampada, the arising of the six sense bases is very often explained with reference to a mother's womb. It is the usual practice to interpret such categories as nama-rupa, name and form, and salayatana, six sense bases, purely in physiological terms. But for the Buddha, the arising of the six sense bases was not a stage in the growth of a fetus in the mother's womb. It was through wisdom that he saw the six bases of sense contact arising then and there, according to the formula beginning with Chakkhuñca paticca rūpeca uppajjati chakkhuviññāṇam. Dependent on eye and forms arises eye consciousness, etc. They are of a nature of arising and ceasing, like that magic show. Everything in the world is of a nature to arise and cease. The words ye dhamma hetu pabha, of things that proceed from a cause, etc., is an enunciation of that law. Any explanation of the law of dependent arising should rightly begin with the basic principle imasming sati idam hoti, this being this comes to be, etc. This confusion regarding the way of explaining Patisampada is a case of missing the wood for the tree. It is as if the Buddha stretches his arm and says, this is a forest. And one goes and catches hold of a tree, exclaiming, ah, this is the forest. To rattle off the 12 links in the hope of grasping the law of Patisampada is like counting the number of trees in order to see the forest. The subtlest point here is the basic principle involved. This being, this comes to be. With the arising of this, this arises. This not being, this does not come to be. With the cessation of this, this. Let us now examine the connection between the law of dependent arising, Patisampada, and things dependently arisen. Patisampannadhamma. Worldlings do not even understand things dependently arisen as dependently arisen. They are fully involved in them. That itself is samsara. One who has seen the basic principle of Patisampada understands the dictum avijjaya sati sankhara. Preparations are there only when ignorance is there. So he neither grasps ignorance nor does he grasp preparations. In fact, to dwell on the law of dependent arising is the way to liberate the mind from the whole lot of dependently arisen things. Now why do we say so? Every one of those 12 links, according to the Buddha, is impermanent, prepared, dependently arisen, of a nature to wither away, wear away, fade away and cease. Anicchaṁ, saṅkhataṁ, patisamuppannaṁ, khaya dhammaṁ, vaya dhammaṁ, virāga dhammaṁ, nirodhaṁ. The very first link, avijjā, is no exception. They are impermanent because they are made up or prepared, saṅkhataṁ. The term saṅkhataṁ has nuances of artificiality and spuriousness. All the links are therefore unreal in the highest sense. They are dependent on contact, thus and therefore dependent arisen. It is in their nature to wither away, wear away, fade away and cease. When one has understood this as a fact of experience, one brings one's mind to rest not on the things dependently arisen, but on the law of dependent arising itself. There is something extraordinary about this. one must not miss the wood for the trees. When the Buddha stretches his arm and says, that is a forest, he does not expect us to go and grasp any of the trees or to go on counting them so as to understand what a forest is. One has to get a synoptic view of it from here itself. Such a view takes into account not only the trees, but also the intervening spaces between them, all at one synoptic glance. In order to get a correct understanding of Patisamuppada, from a pragmatic point of view, one has to bring one's mind to rest on the norm that obtains between every two links. But this is something extremely difficult, because the world is steeped in the notion of duality. It grasps either this end or the other end. Hard it is for the world to understand the stunts of the Arahant, couched in the cryptic phrase, neva idha na hurang na ubhyamantarina, neither here nor there nor in between the two. The worldling is accustomed to grasp either this end or the other end. For instance, one may grasp either ignorance, avijja, or preparation, sankhara. But here we have neither. When one dwells on the interrelation between them, one is at least momentarily free from ignorance as well as from the delusive nature of preparation. Taking the magic show itself as an illustration, let us suppose that the magician is performing a trick which earlier appeared as a miracle. Now that one sees the counterfeits, hidden strings and secret bottoms, one is aware of the fact that the magical effect is due to the evocative nature of those preparations. So he does not take seriously those preparations. His ignorance is thereby reduced to the same extent. This is how each of those links gets worn out, as the phrase Kaya Dhamma, Vaya Dhamma, Viraga Dhamma, Nirodha Dhamma suggests. All the links are of a nature to wither away, wear away, fade away and cease. So then, preparations are there only when ignorance is there. The preparations are effective only so long as ignorance is there. With the arising of ignorance, preparations arise. When ignorance is not there, preparations lose their provenance. With the complete fading away and cessation of ignorance, preparations too fade away and cease without residue. This then is the relationship between these two links. Let us go for another instance to illustrate this point further. Sankhara paccaya vijnana, dependent on preparations, is consciousness. Generally, the worldlings are prone to take consciousness as a compact unit. They regard it as their self or soul. When everything else slips out of them from their grasp, they grasp consciousness as their soul, because it is invisible. Now, if someone is always aware that consciousness arises dependent on preparations, that with the arising of preparations, consciousness arises, always specific and never abstract, consciousness ceases to appear as a monolithic whole. This particular eye consciousness has arisen because of eye and forms. This particular ear consciousness has arisen because of ear and sound, and so on. This kind of reflection and constant awareness of the part played by preparations in the arising of consciousness will conduce to the withering away, wearing away and fading away of consciousness. Disgust, disillusionment and rejection in regard to consciousness is what accounts for its complete cessation sooner or later. Consciousness is dependent on preparations. And name and form, Namrupa, is dependent on consciousness. The worldling does not even recognize Namrupa as such. We have already analyzed the mutual relationship between name and form as a reciprocity between nominal form and formal name. They always go together and appear as a reflection on consciousness. Here is a case of entanglement within and an entanglement without. Antu jata bhajata. He brought in a simile of a dog on a plant to illustrate the involvement with name and form. When one understands that this name and form, which the world takes as real and calls one's own, is a mere reflection on consciousness, one does not grasp it either. To go further, when one attends to the fact that the six sense bases are dependent on name and form, and that they are only as long as name and form is there, and that with the cessation of name and form, the six sense bases also cease, one is attuning one's mind to the law of dependent arising, thereby weaning one's mind away from its hold on dependently arisen things. Similarly, contact arises in dependence on the six sense bases. Generally, the world is enslaved by contact. In the Nandakovada Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya, there is a highly significant dictum stressing the specific character of contact as such. Tajjan tajjan bhanti pachyan patiche, tajja tajja vedana uppajjanti, tajjasa tajjasa pachyasa nirodha, tajja tajja vedana nirujjanti. Dependent on each specific condition, Venerable Sir, specific feelings arise. And with the cessation of each specific condition, specific feelings cease. The understanding that contact is dependent on the six sense bases enables one to overcome the delusion arising out of contact. Since it is conditioned and limited by the six sense bases, with their cessation it has to cease. Likewise, to attain to the specific contact as the cause of feeling is the way of disenchantment with both feeling and contact. Finally, when one understands that this existence is dependent on grasping, arising out of craving, one will not take existence seriously. Dependent on existence is birth, bhavapatya, jati. While the magic show was going on, the spectators found themselves in a magic world, because they grasp the magic in it. Even so, existence, bhava, is dependent on grasping, upadana. Just as one seated on this side of a parapet wall might not see what is going on the other side, what we take as our existence in this world is bounded by our parents from the point of view of birth. What we take as death is the end of this physical body. We are ignorant of the fact that it is a flux of preparations, sankhar, santati. Existence is therefore something prepared or made up. Birth is dependent on existence. Sometimes we happen to buy from a shop an extremely rickety machine, deceived by its paint and polish, and take it home as a brand new thing. The very next day it goes out of order. The newly bought item was born only the previous day, and now it is out of order to our disappointment. So is our birth with its unpredictable vicissitudes, taking us through decay, disease, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair. This is the price we pay for this brand new body we are blessed with in this existence. In this way, we can examine the relation between any two links of the formula of dependent arising. It is the insight into this norm that constitutes the understanding of Patisamuppada, and not the parrot-like recitation by heart of the formula in direct and reverse order. Of course, the formulation in direct and reverse order has its own special significance, which highlights the fact that the possibility of a cessation of those two links lies in their arising nature itself. Whatever is of a nature to arise, all that is of a nature to cease. Yam kinchi samudaye dhammam, sabbantam nirodha dhammam. As for the Arahant, she has realized this fact in a way that the influx of samved exists. to go further into the significance of the formula, we may examine why ignorance, avidya, takes precedence in it. This is not because it is permanent or uncaused. The deepest point in the problem of release from samsara is traceable to the term asava or influxes. Influxes are sometimes reckoned as fourfold, namely those of sensuality, kamasava, of existence, bhavasava, of views, dittasava, and of ignorance, avijasava. But more often, in context announcing the attainment of paramtut, the standard reference is to three types of influxes. Kamasava api cittam vimuchati, bhavasava api cittam vimuchati, avijasava api cittam vimuchati. The mind is released from the influxes of sensuality, existence, and ignorance. This is because the influxes of ignorance could easily include those of gifts as well. Term asava implies those corrupting influences ingrained in beings due to samsaric habits. They have a tendency to flow in and tempt beings towards sensuality, existence, and ignorance. It might be difficult to understand why even ignorance is reckoned as a kind of influx. While it is recognized as the first link in the chain of dependent arising, ignorance or ignoring is itself a habit. There is a tendency in samsaric beings to grope in the darkness and dislike light. They have a tendency to blink at the light and ignore. It is easy to ignore and forget. The forgetting trait enables them to linger long in samsara. Ignorance as a kind of influx is so powerful that even the keenest in wisdom cannot attain arahanthood at once. The wheel of Dhamma has to turn four times. Hence the fourfold distinction as stream winner, once returner, non-returner, and arahant. The difficulty of combating this onslaught of influxes is already insinuated by the term sattakkhato param, seven more lives at the most, designating a stream winner, and the sakadagami, once returner. The way to cut off these influxes is the very insight into the law of dependent arising. Sometimes the path is defined as the law of dependent arising itself. That doesn't mean the ability to rattle off the 12 links by heart, but the task of bringing the mind to rest on the known of Patichasampada itself. You must bring sati, idam hoti. You must upada, idam padi. You must bring asati, idam nahoti. You must anirodha, idam nirodha. This being, this comes to be. With the arising of this, this arises. This not being, this does not come to be. With the cessation of this, this ceases. It is an extremely difficult task because the mind tends to slip off. The habitual tendency is to grasp this one or the other. The worldling, for the most part, rests on the duality. Not to cling even to the middle is the ideal of an arahant. That is the implication of the conclusive statement in the advice to Bali. Nevidha na huram na ubhyamantara. Neither here nor there nor in between the two. For clarity's sake, let us quote the relevant section in full. Yato tvam bhayena tena, tato tvam bhayena tathya, yato tvam bhayena tathya, tato tvam bhayena nevaidha na huram na ubhyamantarena esevanto dukkhas. And when bahya you are not by it, then bahya you are not in it. And when bahya you are not in it, then by you are neither here, nor there, nor in between. This itself is the end of sorrow. So one who has fully understood the norm of Patisampada is not attached to ignorance, nor is he attached to preparations, since he has seen the relatedness between them. He is attached neither to preparations nor to consciousness, having seen the relatedness between them. The insight into this dependent arising and ceasing promotes such a detached attitude. It is this insight that inculcated in the Tathagata the supreme and excellent selfless. His neutral attitude was not the result of any lack of knowledge or tactical ill-rigging, as in the case of Sanjaya Viratibut. Why does the Tathagata not declare the sense data categorically as true or false? He knows that, given ignorance, they are true and that they are falsified only when ignorance fades away in one who sees the cessation. It is for such a person that the sense basis appears as false and consciousness appears as a conjurer's trick. Fortified with that understanding, he does not categorically assert the sense data as true, nor does he reprimand those who assert them as the truth. That is why the Buddha advocates a tolerant attitude in this discourse. This is the typical attitude of an understanding elder to the questions put by an inquisitive toddler. Generally, the dogmatists in this world are severely entrenched in their own individual viewpoints. As the line Pachyeka Satchesu Puthuni Vitta suggests, we explain the term Saya Sanghuta as on a par with the phrase Pachyeka Satchesu. The problematic term Saya Sanghuta is suggestive of virulent self-opinionatedness. Why are they committed and limited by their own views? Our quotation from the Chula Viva Sutta holds the answer. Neheva Satchani Bahuni Nana Anyatra Sanyani Chani Loko. There are no several and various truths that are permanent in the world apart from perception. According to one's level of perception, one forms a notion of reality. To those in the audience, the tricks of the magician remain concealed. It is that ignorance which arouses preparations, sankhara in them. A typical illustration of individual truths, Pachyeka Satya, is found in the chapter titled Jachandha, congenitally blind in the Udana. There the Buddha brings up a parable of the blind men and the elephant. A certain king got a crowd of congenitally blind men assembled, and having made them touch various limbs of an elephant, asked them what an elephant looks like. Those who touched the elephant's head compared the elephant to a pot. Those who touched its ears compared it to a winnowing basket. Those who touched its tusk compared it to a plowshare, and so forth. The dogmatic views in the world follow the same trend. All that is due to contact, pasupaccaya, says the Buddha. In the Brahmajala Sutta, even with reference to those who have supernormal knowledges, abhinna, depending on name and form which they grasp, they evolve dogmatic theories based on their perceptions, spurred on by sense content. Their dogmatic involvement is revealed by the thematic assertion, idameva satyam mogamanyam. This alone is true, all else is false. The Buddha had no dogmatic involvement because he had seen the cessation of consciousness. Even the mind ceases and mind objects fade away. That is why the Buddha was tolerant and neutral. On many such issues, silence happens to be the answer. This brings us to an extremely deep dimension of this thought. Just as that man with discerning wisdom at the magic show had difficulties in coming to terms with the naive magic fan, so the Buddha too had to face situations where problems of communication cropped up. He committed such an instance in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta. On his way to Kusinara to attain Parinibbana, the Buddha happened to rest under a tree for a while to overcome fatigue. Pukusa of Malla, a disciple of Alarakala, who was coming from Kusinara on his way to Pava, saw the Buddha seated there and approached him. After worshipping him, he made the following joyful utterance. Santena vata bhanti pabbajita viharena viharanti. Venerable Sir, those who have gone forth are indeed living a peaceful life. Though it was apparently a compliment for the Buddha, he came out with an episode which was rather in praise of his teacher Alarakalama, who had attained to the plane of nothingness, Akinchanyat. While on a long journey, my teacher Alarakalama sat under a wayside tree for noonday siesta. Just then, 500 carts were passing by. After the carts had passed that spot, the man who was following them walked up to Alarakalama and asked him, "Venerable Sir, did you see about 500 carts passing by?" "No, friend, I didn't see." "But Venerable Sir, didn't you even hear the sound?" "No, friend, I didn't hear the sound." "Venerable Sir, were you asleep then?" "No, friend, I was not asleep." "Were you conscious then, Venerable Sir?" "Yes, ma'am." "So then, Venerable Sir, while being conscious and awake, you neither saw nor heard as many as 500 carts passing by? All the same, your double robe is bespattered with mud." "Yes, ma'am." "And then, Venerable Sir, that man was highly impressed by it and paid the following compliment to Alarakalama. 'It is a wonder, it is a marvel, what the peaceful life those who have gone forth are leading. So much so that one being conscious and awake would neither see nor hear as many as 500 carts passing by.' When Pukkusa cited this incident in praise of Alarakalama, the Buddha asked him, 'What do you think, Pukkusa, which of these two feats is more difficult to accomplish? That one being conscious and awake would neither see nor hear as many as 500 carts passing by, or that while being conscious and awake, one would not see or hear the streaks of lightning and peals of thunder in the midst of a torrential downpour?'" When Pukkusa grants that the latter feat is by far the more difficult to accomplish, the Buddha comes out with one of his past experiences. "At one time, Pukkusa, I was staying in a chaff house at Atuma, and there was a torrential downpour with streaks of lightning and peals of thunder, during the course of which two farmers, brothers, and four bulls were struck down dead. A big crowd of people had gathered at the spot. Coming out of the chaff house, I was pacing up and down in open air when a man from that crowd walked up to me and worshipped me and respectfully stood on one side. Then I asked him, 'Friend, why has this big crowd gathered here?' 'Just now, Venerable Sir, while it was raining in torrents with streaks of lightning and peals of thunder, two farmers, brothers, and four bulls were struck down dead. That is why a big crowd has gathered here. But where were you, Venerable Sir?' 'I was here itself, friend.' 'But didn't you see it, Venerable Sir?' 'No, friend, I didn't see it.' 'But didn't you hear the sound, Venerable Sir?' 'No, friend, I did not hear the sound.' 'But then, Venerable Sir, were you asleep?' 'No, friend, I was not asleep.' 'But, Venerable Sir, were you conscious, Sanyi?' 'Yes, friend.' And then Pukkusa, that man expressed his surprise in the words, 'It is a wonder, it is a marvel, what a peaceful life those who have gone forth are leading. So much so, that while being conscious and awake, one would neither see nor hear the streaks of lightning and peals of thunder in the midst of a torrential downpour. With that, he came out with his fervent faith in me, worshipped me reverentially, circumambulated me, and left. Some interpret this incident as an illustration of the Buddha's attainment to the cessation of perceptions and feelings. But if it had been the case, the word sanni samano jagaro, while being conscious and awake, would be out of place. That man expressed his wonder at the fact that the Buddha, while being conscious and awake, had not seen or heard anything, though it was raining in torrents with streaks of lightning and peals of thunder. Nor can this incident be interpreted as a reference to the realm of nothingness, Akichanyatana, in the context of the allusion to Alara Kalama, and his less impressive psychic powers. The true import of this extraordinary psychic feat has to be assessed with reference to the Arahatthapala Samadhi we have already discussed. The incident had occurred while the Buddha was seated in Arahatthapala Samadhi, experiencing the cessation of the six sense spheres, equivalent to the cessation of the world. He had gone beyond the world. That is why he didn't see or hear. We are now in a position to appreciate meaningfully that much vexed riddle-like verse we had quoted earlier from the Kalahavivada Sutta. Na sanya sanyi, na visanya sanyi, no piya sanyi, na vibhuta sanyi, evaṁ samitasya vibhoti rūpaṁ sanyāni dāna ipapancha saṅkha. He is not conscious of normal perception, nor is he unconscious. He is not devoid of perception, nor has he resigned at perception. It is to one thus constituted that form ceases to exist. For reckonings through prolificity have perception as their source. Perception is the source of all prolific reckonings, such as those that impelled the audience at the magic show to respond with the ahs and ahs and whistles. One is completely free from that prolific perception when one is in the Arahatthapala Samadhi, experiencing the cessation of the six sense spheres. As we had earlier cited, one is neither percipient of earth in earth, nor of water in water, nor of fire in fire, nor of air in air, nor is one conscious of a this world in this world, nor of another world in another world, and so on. But all the same, one is percipient. Sanyuchapana asa. Of what is he percipient or conscious? That is none other than what comes up as the title of this series of sermons. Namely, etang santang, etang panitang, yadidang sabba sankhara samato, sabbupadipati nisaggo, tannakyo, virago, nirodho, nibbana. This is peaceful, this is excellent, namely the stilling of all preparations, the relinquishment of all assets, the destruction of craving, detachment, cessation, extinction.
Dear listeners, it is our sincere wish to make these sermons accessible, free of charge, to all who like to listen to them, because the gift of the Dhamma excels all other gifts. We therefore encourage you to copy these sermons and share them with others, but kindly note that they should not be reproduced for sale. May the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you.